morning, everyone. Hope you're having a great morning. Welcome to Morning Drive right here at WTBR 89.7, Pittsfield Community Radio. You also may be watching us on PCTV, Pittsfield Community Television. And you can always catch this show or any other Morning Drive shows by going to pittsfieldtv.org. I'm sitting with a really good friend of mine today, and just the things that he's been doing are pretty interesting. I hope you catch the entire show. I'm sitting with Joe Jerwin. He's a local historian. And we're going to be chatting about the research he has done on dozens and dozens of homes and businesses throughout Pittsfield and actually throughout Berkshire County. And he has been affectionately known as the home historian. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Good morning. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you here. The work and the research you've been done has been so interesting to follow. It really has. So what are some of the things that people have asked you to do in research?
All sorts of things. I mean, primarily the last few years, I've been working in property research. So anything from houses, commercial buildings, apartment buildings, land parcels that have no structures on them at all. And then a little bit of some specialized projects. I've consulted on some background research for, you know, different kinds of community projects and maps, and sometimes a little bit of family genealogy for folks. So, you know, usually, you know, I mostly work in property, but I have a little bit of flexibility and try to help people get answers when I can.
Why do the people think this is so important? I mean, why do people want this kind of information?
I think, well, the motives, there's a range of motives. Some people have kind of very pragmatic reasons where they've bought a new house and they're trying to look for answers about architectural oddities and things, or maybe they're looking to do renovations and they want to try to find out more about the healing so they can get more authenticity in the remodels. Sometimes they're, some of my clients are obligated by permitting, if they're demolishing, say, half of a building or more, they have to hire someone to research the history to, you know, essentially find out, you know, make sure that Washington never slept there, kind of thing. Okay. And that came into, you know, as you probably remember with the Samuel Harrison house, we almost demolished that. Then the city of Pittsfield and some other towns started requiring a little bit of background research. But I think the number one thing is kind of an emotional sense of place. I think people have, you know, a strong kind of emotional, non-logical kind of existential connection to places that we live and spend a lot of, you know, a lot of the important moments of our lives in. And they want to know. They want to know what families have come before there, what kinds of, you know, what they did, what they, you know, how they use the homes and properties and things. And I think that's increasing. I think we're more and more interested in kind of the history of our surroundings and our sense of place, and even some of the social justice ramifications of property and, you know, our history nationally and locally. So.
Now, I think it's really fascinating how in depth your reports are. So I have been following some of them, and I have to tell you, some of the properties I've been in. So even though I didn't live in them, for example, the George Haddad house, I grew up with Elizabeth, with Liz and George, and I was really good friends with Liz in the, you know, 70s. And so to hear, so when I saw her parents' home listed, I had to read it, and I was amazed by how extensive the report was. That it's just not about the house was built in this year and then it was remodeled in this year. And I mean, it's, you give the house life.
Yeah. Well, they have life. I try to find it, you know, to the best extent I can. But I think, you know, these stories are there and they're just, they're waiting for us to and we've always had that interest. If it was a big mansion, you know, we've always pursued finding out about the history if the folks were rich. Right. But I think there's a new evolving sensibility of, like, you know, other folks mattered in history too. And, you know, so it's really interesting.
No, I think you make a good point, because I think traditionally, we have always thought about the history of homes and property being because they have some place in some significant historical event that's occurred in a town or a city or in our country. And this is now giving credence, if you will, that every story sort of matters in the bigger sense.
Yeah, I think that's to me been the most interesting part of this work is the kind of the lack of selection bias on my part. You know, I'm entering this as, you know, just cold as whoever I get inquiries from, whatever clients need me or want me to research their homes, that's where I'm going. So there's not a pre-selection for, you know, the Allen family. Or for like famous people that were attached to companies or, you know, famous war events or, you know, had connections to presidents or something. There's not, it's not just looking for any particular slice. It's just tracing back the story of the place itself. And that gives a cross section of a lot of people. And yeah, and there's, it raises questions about what we've chosen to include as the events of historical significance, and what ones, what people and events we've chosen to exclude from the narrative.
And I think that's part of the research, the value of the research that you're doing. It is giving validity to the contributions to so many people in our community that perhaps may have been forgotten or ignored or not put in their place, because everyone makes a contribution. And I've always said that. But I think the work you're doing is showing how the history of the families in the community is just as important as the historical, I guess, historical stories that we tell about our communities. It's really a story about community.
Yeah. Yeah. And how broad and deep and various community can be. Yeah. I think it's been eye opening for me. It's knocked out a lot of preconceptions that that I had going into this over the years.
Have you had any big surprises? I mean, is there one that sticks in mind that you sort of went in expecting this, and then when you did this history, you're like, wow, that didn't know that. Is there anything that sticks in your mind?
Yeah, well, recently I've sort of been on a sidekick researching something that it was supposed to be a column for my piece for my Eagle column, but I kind of been going deeper and deeper into the history of dogs in the Berkshires, and sort of just the changes in the way, as a microcosm of the way that humans have related to dogs, you know, from the 18 and 1900s to the 21st century. And it's why it was really wild to me. I didn't realize like how expendable dogs used to be. I mean, dogs were not conceived of as man's best friend in the Berkshires, you know, in the 1800s or early 20th century at all. It was, they were, you know, a kind of necessary evil at best, but in a sheep based economy, they were also very feared, very distrusted. We were slaughtering dogs, you know, right up until the mid 20th century. The Pittsfield police chief, who also served as dog officer throughout his whole term, John Sullivan, when he was police chief, he called his dog permitting drives blood and iron campaigns. And that was like, get your dog licensed or it gets shot on sight.
Wow.
And that was like the norm in the Berkshires for many decades. But yeah, so piecing together things like that and things how just really basic things that seem like, an unchanged part of our lives, like man, you know, dogs being man's best friends kind of thing is, our cultural, values have shifted tremendously.
Yeah, no, I find it incredibly interesting, and it's things that people don't normally think about, but I think it allows us to understand society and the society that we live in and how we evolved to be where we are. I think it's an incredible, necessary study. I really do.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, that just, I mean, the way we've kind of, the history has changed our perspectives on things that we take for granted, you know, every day. I think even down to, you know, just how we take care of our kids and things like that. I think one of the striking thing, one of the hardest parts of my job is the amount of, child mortality one sees as you go back far enough in the story of a house, between disease and accidental death and crime and things like that. Just by almost every index, child mortality has dropped dramatically in our society over the past few decades. And that's something I think we kind of take for granted now. I think it's like, and people just had to swallow a lot of that pain in previous decades. There was, it's sort of rare to get through, a whole family genealogy or a house that, doesn't have a good bit of child mortality in it. The one I'm dealing with now has a ton, and it's like, it's daunting, but it's also reason for hope. So.
Oh, that's true. So one of the questions I have to ask you is, I've always wanted to do sort of my family history and the home that I grew up in and the home that I had in the Berkshires, but it seems so daunting to me to do all that research. Like, what is it in your background that enables you to do this? Where, how did you get here to the home historian?
Honestly, I mean, I think the main thing, how I got here was such a roundabout path. I think what's maybe different from a lot of other people who provide the kind of service I do in other areas is that I don't come from an architectural background. I don't come from a house construction background or preservation. My training was in anthropology, so I think it shows in my work that I'm much more focused on the human narrative of places than the architectural narrative. But as you know, I've been doing local history, starting with my column back in the Advocate Weekly, and I guess about 20 almost 20 years ago now. Covered contemporary day news and journalism for iBurgers and had a local history column there, and kind of just ended up looking at houses and backgrounds of our local history to complement my understanding of contemporary events too. And by the time the pandemic came around and I was working in the arts and suddenly had a lot of time on my hands, I started doing it full time and kind of seeing if that was something enough people were interested in, and it's just kind of gone from there. But I think one of the things I bring to it is very simple, is just doing it in bulk. It's easier for me to research someone's house probably in most cases than it is for them, because I'm doing it for several houses a week, so I'm already blocking out time to be at the library. I'm already going through the archives for, so I do, I'll look up several different, while I'm in old newspapers, I'm looking for things for several different houses at once. So the same with maps and deeds and, so every database and every archives that I'm going into, I'm doing several things at once, which makes it much more time, efficient for me. And I'm also working from a background of doing it all the time, so I kind of have some structural knowledge of, when you ask me about, your house on Chickering Street, well, I know about when Chickering Street, was first laid and some of the other early houses on it. So I kind of, from a first inquiry, I'll have a gut feeling, whether or not the house construction date, that your real estate listing said is correct. About half the time they're not. It's maybe more than half. There's institutional knowledge that I'm bringing to it, but there's also just mass production makes it easier for me to do in a lot of cases, and for people to, make this their hobby for like 3 months of their lives, and just figure out how to get into, where you find all these information and things like that.
Well, I think that's the piece that's most daunting for people who try to do the research. It's just where to start. So, how do you go about researching a house? So, if I said to you, I wanted you to do a home, I mean, where do you start? Do you start by seeing the home? Do you start by talking to the folks that require, asked you for the history? I mean, where does that go?
It varies. There's three main ways that I'll start, depending on several factors from a quick inquiry. I'll I'll give a background glance at the basic assessor's listings always first, and that's publicly available online. And then if I think it's going to be really tricky, if I think there's a lot of questions about when the house was constructed and the date might be way off, or if it's just really interesting to me, I'll schedule a physical examination, and I'll meet. But I don't have to go in your house for every house. There's a lot of ones I can just do at a glance, and at most maybe just get a couple exterior photos. Some houses you really do have to get, there'll be a lot of murkiness in the deeds, and dead ends and things. So you kind of got to look under the hood and really see like the basement, the attic, the parts of houses that haven't been so changed and renovated that you can still find original construction details. So yeah, there's, I either start with maps or deeds or firsthand. If I'm gonna look at a house, I will do as little research before as possible. So I just go in cold and wander around, make impressions, take some notes, take a lot of photos, and then start to dig into it. So it depends on the house. And the way I approach every case is kind of give me the address first, because depending on what I think the age is and what location, what town it's in, will kind of dictate what I give for a price quote and how I proceed kind of from there.
Everyone, if you're just joining me, you're listening to Morning Drive right here at WTBR 89.7 Pittsfield Community Radio. You're probably also watching us on PCTV, Pittsfield Community Television. And if you've missed the first part of this show, it is incredibly interesting, and you can catch up with this show and all the Morning Drive shows on PittsfieldTV.org. I'm sitting with Joe Derwin, who is a local historian. We're chatting about the research he's been doing on dozens of homes and businesses in Pittsfield and throughout Berkshire County. And he is known as the home historian. The work you've been doing is so incredible, Joe, and so interesting. I did take a sneak peek on your website to see all the properties that you have done. And there's been some really, to me, interesting ones. I think you even did your own family home. Now, how did that come about? And did you learn something interesting? Because the Derwins themselves, I need to acknowledge, have a pretty strong history in Pittsfield.
There've been some Derwins around Pittsfield and Lanesboro since the 1760s, but my family home was kind of, it was a different challenge because it was it's been my family for over 50 years now. My father owned it before he married my mother, and so there was kind of a known period, and then there was and then the family that owned it before that was a longtime owner that had owned it for several decades too. But it was really interesting because I actually ended up getting in touch with like grandchildren of the people who used to live there, and connecting some dots for their family through the research and finding some interesting parallels kind of between say the guy who the kid who used to have my room and how his life went and my own. It was so it was that was a fun case to do.
I bet it was. I was thinking about that because in my history, my growing up history, I've lived in primarily two homes. Well, maybe three homes when I was in the Berkshires. And it would be so interesting to find out about the families before us and who are, and even the families who are in them now. So I have to be honest, I keep going to your website and checking the different downloads, samples of houses that you've done. And they're really, I mean, do you share all of them or just do you share a few? Because it's a pretty long list already.
Yeah, I share highlights. There's a lot of clients who don't want necessarily want it made public, and they essentially own the document. The research, I may take excerpts of the research into the people and use it in other ways or in a newspaper column or something. But they own kind of the document, and some people are, most people are pretty fine with having it public. But a lot of gifts too. I do a lot of gifts that people where I'll do a family home that used to be they used to live there, and they want to kind of give it as a gift to, you know, their parents and their siblings, the history of the house that the family used to share. So so some are very on the DL, presents and things, but
Oh, that kind of gives me an idea. That's
it's
right.
a unique gift idea, you know, and sometimes it I've seen people cover like a whole family of eight people for Christmas, you know, with just one who could call them A, and then they just print out eight copies and give them all their siblings and parents. And
I giggle, but I think it's such a great idea. I think the other value to it is it's not, and I think this is what I learned looking at the ones that you had samples on online, and particularly looking at the Haddad house, which is a pretty extensive report, is it's just not about the house, it's about the people. So you have a lot of history and stories of what happened, and there were stories about the Haddad house that I actually remember. I was around when the Jeep flipped, for example. So I remember that. So it was really kind of going back into time and going back into my own history. So what a great way to sort of get some genealogy and some history about your family at the same time of getting something about the actual structural part of the home, right?
And enough, you know, after enough of these family histories pile up, what you end up having is kind of a new, you know, I think we're, you know, not just through my own research, but through, you know, a lot of this going on in the county, we're kind of getting at people's history of the Berkshires, and a new understanding of the community, you know, from having many more pieces of the community, and rather than just, you know, some of the most prominent, you know, citizens that we've had by. And some of these folks that I'm dealing with had terribly interesting lives, but nobody's ever at any point sat down and looked at all the news occurrences of their name and actually strung it together as a biography and actually created, you know, a kind of biographical profile of all these fascinating people that that really impacted the physical community that we're living in today, and, you know, built our buildings and are the reasons why streets are named certain things and go certain directions or don't exist anymore. You know, I mean, there's a ton of change that's happened that affects every day of our lives, driving around locally and, you know, walking our streets, that, you know, these forgotten people, you know, set in motion.
You know, I'm so glad you brought that up because I've always believed that a community's strength is in its people. You know, regardless of who you are and what you do, everyone sort of contributes to making the community work. And by your work, you're proving that they contribute to the community's history. And I think that's an incredible difference in how we historically have approached the history of a town or a city. We've sort of approached it, you know, and particularly in Pittsfield, you know, with the Wendells and the Pomeroys and the Bartletts, like there's names that we all
The
know.
donors, the donors, the people who donate to have their names put on things, to control the conversation for generations.
It's really, actually, that would be a great book, Joe. I just gave you a good idea. A book called The Donors, and we, right? But it's true. And I think that's happened historically across the country. It's how we tell stories about communities. We look there first. And I think the research that you're doing and the work that you're doing through the Home Historian is proving there's a whole different story and history in a community that really needs to be told and preserved.
I mean, I think one thing that was really eye-opening for me was recently delving really deep into the history of the Gulf region of the Berkshires, you know, between Dalton and Lanesboro, the old Gulf Road area of the Boulders. And BNRC had approached me, and they really wanted to, you know, I have to give them a lot of props because they're an organization that's really trying to redress the inherent social injustice of what everything is named and how things have come to settle property wise. But they're really looking to find out, you know, the indigenous history of properties and, you know, the marginalized communities that interacted with them that were completely excluded from our histories. And so finding, you know, just the kind of peeling back the layers of myth, because the first things you get when you get to, particularly indigenous history in the Berkshires is, it's mostly just legends. Mostly legends by that white people made up in the mid to late, 1800s. So peeling away all the fake, news history, and trying to drill down to what we can really determine. And just these big, huge myths that have taken up so much of our local and national history, things like the Underground Railroad that have been mythologized into something really different from what was actually going on. And that was a big one with the Gulf, was this idea of an Underground Railroad that kind of notable white families in Pittsfield and Dalton kind of concocted decades after the fact, to
Interesting.
maybe sort of absolve themselves, of things. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the traditional Berkshire history, for the tourist brochure, is just exaggerated or outright myth. And so, peeling that apart is going to take a lot of concerted work by a lot of people for generations. But it's really exciting to be a small part of it. It's a blast to do, and it's emotional work.
I was going to ask you that if you enjoyed, if you must enjoy it, because you're obviously doing it. But it must be like being on a treasure hunt each and every day, right? So your days are, although you're doing the same kind of work, your days are really different every day, right? Because you're exploring a different property and learning something new.
Yeah, I think I most all the research, whether I'm at home on my laptop at the library or in houses and cemeteries
Oh.
and hiking trails, is all the research is so grand. I'm not a big fan of writing up the reports. I find that a real drag, but that's been the story of my life. I don't really enjoy writing,
That's
but
funny, considering that's all I've ever known you to do.
It's weirdly, it's the only way to get paid for researching things,
Yeah.
to have to like write it up in a way that's valuable for somebody else. I found there are very few opportunities to just do pure research for my own benefit and education, or I'd be doing that.
That's right, that's true. But that's funny to hear because you are an incredible writer. You really are. You know how to tell a story.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed
I'm a
your
good
writing.
rewriter. First drafts you wouldn't want to see.
Oh, it takes a
It's
while,
just
right?
tenacity.
But once they come together, I mean, the reports that you have online are just really, really interesting. So what do you think the future, how do you think your work is going to impact the way we tell the history of Pittsfield? Do you think it will, if enough, if there's enough of a I don't know, mass, I guess, of people doing this?
I guess I don't really think about it much, but I guess I hope it is p some part of the conversation that it's some the work is valued. I think when I'm writing, particularly like things when I can write whatever I want from my ego column or things like that, I'm writing for versions of myself. I'm writing for like some weird 20-year-old that is going to find this, article 20 years from now and be the way I found things by Clay Perry and all these folks that came before me in the Berkshires that had, that covered the niche things. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I hope it would be part of more of a conversation, but I tend to think sometimes, the stuff that we don't want as part of the narrative will eventually return to obscurity, and facts that I've dug up will rebury themselves again because they're not popular, and but they'll be out there, they'll be somewhere on the record, so some curious person in 20 or 30 years can dig it up in a folder in the Athenaeum or whatever digital. I kind of hope they still have folders at the Athenaeum and whatever digital future versions they have, because I've loved looking at things in all the formats and kind of seeing things digitized, but then also finding the serendipity of like, handwritten notes by a librarian in 1962 that's, you know, shoved in a file and in the filing cabinets is pretty sweet.
Well, we're at the top of the hour, so we're going to take a moment and give a break. During the break, you're going to hear a little bit about our underwriters who make all things possible here at WTBR 89.7, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'll be right back with you in about a minute.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs. Greylock Federal. Opportunity grows here, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
Support for closed captioning on PCTV is brought to you by the Feigenbaum Foundation, with additional support from the Pittsfield Commission on Disabilities.
If it rocks, it rocks. WTBR 89.7.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
And we're back. Welcome to the Morning Drive. My name is Donna Todd Rivers. I've been your host for the first half. I'll be with you for about another 29 minutes. You're listening to us at WTBR 89.7, Pittsfield Community Radio. You may also be watching us on PCTV, Pittsfield Community Television. And if you've missed any part of the first half of this show, you're going to want to catch it. I promise you that. You can go to PittsfieldTV.org, and you can catch the entire Morning Drive shows, all of them, if you missed any of them. We always love being with you, and you can always catch a show. I'm sitting with Joe Derwin. We're talking about the work he's been doing on the histories of homes and businesses here in the Berkshires. He's affectionately known as the home historian, and he also, you'll be seeing his column in The Eagle. So before we went to the break, Joe was mentioning that he just really enjoys all the different ways that we preserved history in the past, whether it be old photos, files, handwritten notes. But we've entered the world now of digital, and everything's online. I mean, you don't see a you don't even see a thank you note handwritten, right? People text each other. So what about the history that may be lost or preserved as we go into the digital age and continue to move in the digital age?
I think about that a lot, really, because, yeah, when I'm doing houses, you know, as I'm creating biographies of people, it gets more difficult in some ways as you get to the most recent couple of owners, because of changing privacy standards, laws, HIPAA. I mean, none of these things existed before. And everybody's, you know, there was a time when everybody's business, personal, family business, alcohol problems, unwed pregnancies, everything was just in the newspaper, including your medical ailments, you know, the daily listing of who was in the hospital. And, or we'd have grandparents who'd, see, oh, you had a tonsillectomy and send you a card because they saw it in the paper, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was the way. So now we have this different animal of social media, which has variable settings for privacy. Some people have their whole lives up, and I can go back and find a pretty good accurate portrayal of somebody's life over the last 10 years just by finding their Facebook page.
Yep.
Or their Twitter feed. And then you have people who have much more stringent privacy settings. So it really, I wonder sometimes what will happen to some of that information. Will it eventually be like the census, where after enough years pass, they'll just dump it all on to public servers, and you'll be able to search everybody's pack Facebooks and MySpaces from the old days? Or will, so much of what we communicated to the people around us about our lives just vanish as those companies go under, as already happened, with MySpace.
That's right.
Put tons of, I had a blog on there where I put so much stuff and so many pictures and things, and that kind of just, that's all gone somewhere now. So, it is really I encourage people to hard copy, you know, key things. Keep physical journals and occasionally at least take print some of your key memory photos and family photos and things like that. You know, if you're looking toward, you know, with an eye towards preserving family history and stuff, take group photos in front of recognizable buildings and family homes, like, you know, with a good view. That's my recommendation. Everybody standing facing forward in front of, you know, the family hearth, or, you know, outside the house, or in a recognizable landmark, and print some of those and have them and, you know, see that they are passed down to either your descendants, or if you don't have descendants, donate them to local historical societies, you know, because your story matters. Everybody's story matters, and you were here and you had an impact. So it's let's celebrate that. Let's know about it. Help inform, you know, humanity's future. I think that's really key. That's really something we all have to think about a little bit, that we all have some responsibility in that.
No, I'm so glad you said it. And I think the message of today's show, you just said it beautifully, is your story matters. And I think I've always, you know, that's been a personal belief of mine. It's a belief that was instilled in me by my mom, who, you know, when I was a young girl, I can remember I was like 5 years old, and she said to me, I came home and a little boy was crying at school. And of course I was in kindergarten, and I was like, oh, mom, he cried all day. And she said, well, did you find out why? You know, and she instilled that in me. So I've always thought people's stories mattered. I always find people interesting. So the work you do fascinates me, because it's not only about buildings, it's about our community and people in it. You mentioned about, you know, preserving photos and things. And I think about that now, because all my photos are on my phone, right? So I just had one of my phones die. And I was in complete panic mode, because I lost like 50% of everything, which means, you know, photos. It was just all like, it was almost like part of my history just disappeared.
Yeah. Yeah. And I could caution to, I mean, it's one of those things, like, we all know we're supposed to back everything up. You know, we all know it by now. We all know we should do it. And we, you know, we all forget, most of us, you know, forget for long periods of time until we're really good at it right after we've had a crash or something, you know, then we're backing up real for a while. But yeah, it's a challenge. Yeah. It's just, I have gotten to a point where I'm backing up things more. But just because I'm just in the habit of, you know, a lot of what I do with my day is filing stuff. So yeah.
But I think it's a really good point. So anyone listening, I think Joe brought up something really interesting, and it's about trying to consider, you know, at least capturing part of your family history, because we may or may not have access to your phone, you know, to photos 50 years from now. And you might just have some incredible history of your family that would be interesting and pertinent and important to the history of our community.
I think that's the lesson of, we've seen that mediums that don't change format are crucial, you know, putting things down on paper or on, you know, in places where they will survive changes in mediums, you know, is really key, you know, and things have been preserved for thousands of years because there was a physical, you know, so I think we should continue to have physical hard copies of some things, certainly.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I can remember when I was a young kid, my parents, of course, took film on 8mm. Was that the reels? Right. And then we went to all these different, and there's some things that you have to now convert into, then we converted them into VHS. Now we're converting them into CDs. Like, we have to keep converting as technology changes, all this digital, we have to keep converting it to the next best thing.
Yeah. I probably spent 5% of my life just converting things from one medium to another between music and files. And yeah, it's crazy. And that's why it is, you know, I still use old fashioned filing cabinets and things, because It doesn't change, and it's and survive apocalypses and things like that. In some cases, you know, people will still be able to find some, you know, books and photos and things like that, even if, you know, electrical power plants just cease running and things like that. You know.
So I think 50 years from now, there's probably going to be a Joe Gerwin part of the Berkshire Antineum with all your file boxes in there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I think they probably keep some of it digital.
Oh, there you go.
I'd like to have some. I will certainly be donating a lot. There'll certainly be a lot of paper for somebody to deal with when I pass away.
There you go. You'll be donating all of that. I want to talk a little bit about the CPA. And I know you're involved in that a little bit. So what's happening there?
Well, yeah. So, you know, I think the Community Preservation Act, you know, you were there. You're on the council, right?
When
that was passed in 2016 in Pittsfield.
Yeah.
That was just, to me, you know, that was a big victory for Pittsfield's that I think, you know, it was hard won. There was a fair amount of naysaying and complaining, but the proofs that we've seen keep coming in, and I keep seeing things that have been demonstrably aided by this fund that we voted in, you know. As a public, we kind of created this thing, which has done arguably more than, you know, maybe any one local politician on their own has initiated. So I think, yeah, it's a real victory, and it's something to, I hope other towns are looking on. I've been noticing the kind of tragic closure of the North Adams YMCA recently that is affecting a lot of people, a lot of seniors who swam there and people who used programs and services there that are difficult to replicate. So that's a win for CPA in Pittsfield. I think if you look back, what became a $12 million renovation started with just a couple $100,000 of seed money and community preservation stuff that was voted in by our local committee and helped to leverage, you know, millions in state and private funds. And that's, you know, that's the system working. That's what we predicted would happen, is that these relatively small allocations that we could just kind of greenlight as a community, didn't have to go out and find an initial grant or an initial funder who believed in it. We could decide as a community, you know, without making an argument to Boston that this is a valid project. And then, you know, once the ball's rolling, it, you know, as you know, it's much easier to get money when you have money.
Right.
So it's a lot easier to piece together and leverage funds for something once you've got a good sized chunk to, you know, that's been allocated by a community. So, you know, yeah, we've seen well over 50 projects of historic preservation and parks and recreation, some important affordable housing. I do think that the fund may start to veer more towards the latter, towards affordable housing options, as it should. I mean, as it should. I think what we've seen in the last few years in the community with the just dire housing crisis, just the huge elephant in the room of we need to look at housing options and how we can put them up. And that's something that, we can look to our local history about there. I think that's one of the striking things that has really stood out to me is how much Pittsfield struggled with housing and creating housing for our constituents for a long, long time, for centuries.
No, that's interesting. I just actually had a conversation with my mother the other night about her family and how my grandparents met. And my grandmother had a rooming house on Fence Street. So that was, you know, for immigrants coming in, they would stay. And if you think there's a large parts of Pittsfield where there were these four and six apartments, if you will, multifamily homes that were being built as people came into our community. And we don't see that kind of building much unless it's done by a nonprofit, for example, or we don't see builders building these multifamily affordable, even apartments. We're just not really seeing it, but it was kind of an interest. I'd love to learn more about there was a row house on Fenn Street that was all multis. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were rooming houses at the time.
Yeah, I know the one you mean. They had a fire, I think, a couple of years ago. Yeah. That that was a kind of very much of its time and very much out of the social structure of the city at the time, because you had the big shoe company mm-hmm. on 4th Street, and you had all this Italian immigration, huge Italian population coming into Pittsfield around 1900. Mm-hmm. Some of them could afford to buy homes, but they weren't given that opportunity. No bank in Pittsfield would give a loan to an Italian, a housing loan, until the Banco Italiano was started. You know, an Italian actually had to start a bank to loan to other Italians, and then you see an explosion of houses built because mm-hmm. people had a bunch of capital built up that they couldn't get a mortgage despite their income. And then the whole, you know, East, the whole Little Italy explodes across, know, Newell Street and all those side streets in just, you know, 4 or 5 years, hundreds of houses just go up because people had the money already in hand to pay a mortgage. They just, nobody would give them one. Mm-hmm. Nobody. And the same thing, on the West Side with African-American residents, they, you know, you see no mortgages. One mortgage, I think, in the whole 1910s was, and then in the 1920s, all of a sudden there's like 26 mortgages. There's kind of a big rise. And then there's a backlash to that. You know, I mean, that was also the Klan years in Berkshire County.
Wow.
That was when we were having big KKK rallies, and people were burning crosses on the hillside because they did not like the increase in mortgages being given to Black or Italian families. This was a, you know, fundamental, you know, assault on our way of life and our Americanism at the time. So to some people. So all these social factors play into how, you know, how and when we built the houses we built at every level, which is one of the fascinating things about property research.
No, I can see that. And it really makes you understand that there's a lot of social justice issues. I mean, as you're researching, you are uncovering all these social justice issues that I think people don't think about.
Yeah, and I'm very proud to work around an amazing crop of local historians that are kind of have either been doing it longer than I are or are merging. I've been really impressed with the work that was done under the auspices of the NAACP and with some Greylock funds that the researching into redlining in Pittsfield's was really inspiring to me, you know, both in what it discovered and what it and just how thorough and in depth it was. And what we see is really kind of the opposite of the myth of racial relations and how they went in the Berkshires. It was like we really had a reverse underground railroad, which is, you know, kind of what you would suspect if you look at the census data. You look and you see the African-American population of Pittsfield go from like almost 6% to 1% over 100 years. You know, maybe a little bit, 1840 to 1960, you just see complete static. You know, there's the same number of, you know, more or less of African-American residents in 1840 as there is in 1960, but the rest of, you know, the county grows by like 100,000, you know, 100,000 white people. So it really was like a reverse, you know, underground railroad where we just pushed people right out of town through a combination of, you know, housing practices, banking practices, hiring practices. Mm-hmm. I mean, going back to that was something Samuel Harrison's son was constantly calling out in the late 1800s, was that the white mill owners were definitely discriminating, in hiring. And so all these things offset and created, the imbalances that are still playing out generationally here, today. So it's crucial that we know what really happened, rather than proceed from kind of a false dialogue, which is, I think, a lot of our planning failures, and a lot of our stumbles as a city trying to, reassert itself, and a Berkshire County with a population trying to stop this population hemorrhaging. We're making all these missteps because we're proceeding sometimes from a mythological view of what's been done before and what our past is, economically, socially, et cetera.
No, I agree. I've always said, I think there's parts of our past that are definitely the path to our future. And I think acknowledging who we are and what we've been is going to be the strongest way to become who we want to become. And I've always kind of thought that. It's sort of going into the future with both eyes open, right? And I think sometimes we forget to do that. If you just joined me, I'm having a fascinating conversation with Joe Jerwin. He's a local historian, best known as the home historian here in Pittsfield and the Berkshires. And we're talking about the work that he's been doing, researching home histories here in Pittsfield, as well as his just extensive knowledge of the history of Pittsfield. So Joe, you've recently started a column in the Eagle. So glad that we all have an opportunity to read your writings again. What is your take on that column? What is your goal there?
I think with my column in the Eagle, I'm trying to do something a bit different than I did with my past local history columns for other publications. Partly because the Eagle's just been real good sports about letting me run with some things. But a big shout out to Jane Kaufman, the community engagement editor who recruited me, and Kevin Moran. They've been a big help, and they've just they've been very gracious about letting me tackle some tough subjects. So I'm really just, that's sort of, it's sort of my like more Hulk smash, approach to local history. I'm just like a little bit of a bull in a china shop. It's, all kinds of topics from the opioid crisis in local history, terrible crimes, epidemics, just kind of the less flattering, sometimes counterintuitive aspects and it's mostly been great. I think the Eagle readers have been wonderful.
Yeah, I think people have really loved the column. It's so fascinating. You learned so much.
I think there is this much greater yearning that we are starting to have in the 21st century for an authentic history, and maybe even kind of a sense of imperative that this is like might be our last century to get it right, and if we don't figure things out as the species now, we might not have a lot more centuries to do so. I think it's great to see. It's great to see, some changing social ideas and greater receptivity to. There's pushback. There's certainly some pushback and some people who are. I rarely go like a whole week without getting some kind of comment about stop erasing our history, and usually it's just because I'm countering something that was a myth that actually did erase some history, but there's a lot of concern that we're erasing our history now because it's changing a little bit with more objective study and more look at contemporary sources. But so there's it's a push and pull, and it's going to be part of the American conversation.
I think the telling of history has always been that way, though. I think you can only see something through the lens that you carry with you. So as every generation looks back, we're seeing it through a different lens. It's very similar to your own memories as a person. I mean, you know, if I look back as a 16-year-old girl at a memory that happened at six, I'm going to see that differently as a 30-year-old woman looking back as we go through life, our lenses change. And I think the same thing is with community history. You know, there's certain histories that are just very comfortable for people. And it's the narrative that sort of makes them safe.
And nostalgia is with us all the time. I mean, it's part of our brains have evolved to, you know, treat current things happening to us and current threats as more serious than things that happened in the past. Naturally, because, you know, a snake that you saw 10 years ago is not a threat to you in the way that a snake, like, you know, slithering into your sleeping bag right now is. So our brain kind of, you know, we know through psychology that our brain kind of exaggerates the past and changes it into a more favorable thing. And then you also have the fact that where we are in life changes because I think the biggest thing that I've dealt with in local history is really the challenge when I get into recent decades where people have memories which conflict with what was factually documented at the time, you know, where we have really prevalent assumptions that people have always had. There, you know, there's kind of a strong evidence that every generation for the last few thousand years has thought that the times are getting you know, more dangerous, and kids are listening to their parents less, and kids are getting worse, and so that's an artifact of, you know, where we are in our lives. We weren't watching documentaries about serial killers when we were, you know, 8 or 10. So we don't think that sort of thing happened. We don't think, you know, we think, but I mean, over and over, what I find factually looking at, you know, crime in the Berkshires for just decades that I've been studying it is, you know, it is, you know, on almost every column, you know, crime has gone down. You know, it went up during, you know, the 60s to early 90s. Mm-hmm. And then it has been, you know, primarily declining. Homicides are down, assaults are down, car thefts are way down from, you know, what we, you know, when I was a kid. Maybe I have less nostalgia because I came about, you know, I came of age around that, like 91 to 92, when we were at an all-time peak for murder in the Berkshires. You know, I was going to a movie theater every Saturday, where there was a creepy janitor who we found out was a serial killer. You know, my neighbor got murdered. It was a dire kind of creepy time when I first became aware of local news. So I lack some of that nostalgia. And then there was, you know, everybody's dad was moving out of Pittsfield that I knew at the time too, because of GE. So how we remember things, I have to control, you know, when in my research, how I remember things and try to, you know, we can account for our own bias. We can't eliminate it, but we can account for it, and we can sort of do the algebra to take it out of the equation of the final, you know, assessment. But
it is, it's hard. This has been a really fascinating conversation. Just in the last minute or so we have left, what can we expect going forward with the Eagle column? Anything, any story that we should be waiting to read?
I think the next piece is going to be something fun with circuses. I'm going to take a break from hard in your face history and do maybe a little P.T. Barnum action. But then it's going to be back to some things that are tough to hear, maybe.
That's okay. I'm so grateful for all the work that you're doing. I'm grateful to the families and the businesses who are reaching out to you for you to do the history of their homes and their businesses, because by doing that, they're adding to the story of Pittsfield, who we are, who we've been, and really adding to the vision of who we can become once we understand our history. So I think, thank you all to the clients who are working with you as well.
Oh yes, all my gratitude. I couldn't be doing, finding all that I am without them.
Well, hopefully you'll be back to chat with me again. I'd love to have you back on, and maybe we'll talk about some of the famous donors in the Berkshires. How's that?
Yeah, sure, we'll get ourselves in some trouble there.
I'm sure we can. Thank you, everyone, for listening. This has been The Morning Drive. My name is Donna Todd Rivers. I've been with you for about the last hour. Please catch the show if you missed it on PittsfieldTV.org. I'm looking forward to chatting with you again. Until then, everyone, make sure you know and you preserve your family history. Take care, everyone.